Francesca present Seva Matrimony.
I think we should open the show with you singing A Good Man Is Hard to Find, as in the movie.
Yeah, no.
Oh, but you are aware that someone sang that in the movie. You don't remember that big voice woman?
A little sexist.
It's not at all. All right, but we are here to talk about Blue Jasmine. We split for this one. We saw it separately, but in pretty close proximity. But you're fresher off of it. So, and also, my reaction to this movie is probably a lot more predictable because I'm a huge Woody Allen fan and have seen every Woody Allen movie and at least liked all of them, but loved a lot of them. And I know you're a lot more divided. So I'm curious as to your feelings about it first.
Well, I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah?
Yes.
Elaborate.
I thought it was an interesting film. I don't know. I'm not good at soliloquizing.
Well, let me try to set you up for something here then.
Okay.
So, I mean, it all pretty much hinges around Cate Blanchett's performance.
Well, obviously, you know I love her.
Yeah.
She was great. I was surprised.
I guess what my main thing, because I know about, it's tough for you, I think, to watch movies about people that you don't like. Did you like her character? Because she has a lot of detestable factors, but...
No, but I liked watching her character.
So you didn't sympathize for her?
No. Really, he never gives you an opportunity to sympathize with her. Like, even if you start to feel a little bad for her. I think because, obviously, we should say, especially...
Spoiler alert.
Spoilery talk about this movie, and you don't want to have the movie spoiled. So turn it off and go see it, and then come back and listen later. But even without knowing what you know in the last 10 minutes or 5 minutes of it, I think you always have a sense that even if she was ignorant, it was willfully so mm-hmm. about her husband's shady dealings.
Sure.
Because you are being willfully ignorant if your husband is extremely wealthy and you don't ask why. Like, and maybe it would be totally on the up and up, but you're still being willfully ignorant if you're happy just to spend the money and be the arm candy.
Well,
like,
I think
willful
that her
ignorance.
I think her sister says at a certain point, rather sympathetically, you know, this handsome rich guy comes along and says, "I'm going to make all your problems go away forever." You know, I think a lot of people would go for that.
Yes.
I think, you know, while she's clearly has some pretty serious sort of psychological issues outside of that, but maybe a lot of that was caused by what happened to her. And I think a lot of people, I think what's interesting about his decision to kind of explore a character like this in a full movie, and he's done, he used to do a lot of movies like this in the 80s. He did a lot of movies about rich, white, New Yorker women. And how they sort of were able to deceive themselves about reality and either waking up from that or how they got along through their days. But I think what interests him about that is that he finds a lot of sympathy in characters like that, even though everyone sort of likes to shake their finger at them, because I think a lot more people would react that way than maybe tell themselves they would. It's sort of like the burden of having everything you want if all you had to do was ignore some things.
Yeah, but I think...
And a lot of people do that on a smaller scale with many other things in their life.
I think over the course of the movie, you know, while you're getting her flashbacks, pretty much in chronological... They're in chronological order, yeah.
I think so.
I don't think they jump around that much. You sort of get more and more breadcrumbs dropped that she is just, like, kind of turning a blind eye, even with, like, his infidelity. That, like, you know, when her sister sort of suggests it, she's like, no, that could never happen to me. Like, she's kind of she's kind of so prideful that she can't imagine that anything could be wrong with her life.
Well, I think it's twofold. Like, I think that she should. I think she talks herself out of believing it could be true. So, like, I think when she finally finds out...
Hence, willful ignorance.
No, but it's, like, not conscious is what I'm saying. So, I think, like, when she finally gets that talk with her friend and finds out everything for sure, and she just has no choice but to face it, I think it's legitimately tough and shocking for her because she has done a really good job of convincing herself that it that none of it happened. Like, I don't think she's just lying to other people. I think she's lying to herself about a lot of things.
Yes.
And some of that is sort of like, it can't all be conscious if you're having to lie to yourself about stuff. I think that's what's interesting and why she sort of ultimately ends up crazy is because there's this like battle going on inside her own head and not all of it is fully just a conscious choice.
Yeah. Well, and it's sort of, she sort of seems destined for it because like she can't conceive and it continues through the entire movie. She cannot conceive that her sister could be happy in her humble life. Like that's just simply unthinkable to her. And, you know, and by the way, you have yourself at one point made a comment about someone which was to the tune of, like, he thinks he's happy. And I'm like, Matt is what happiness is. If you feel happy, you're happy. You can't tell someone else what happy is.
Well, no, but
someone
people,
who lived
well, here's
a humble
funny.
Life in a way that they liked it, and you had the gall to say he thinks he's happy.
Well,
and I had to quickly put you in your place and go, like, no, if he's happy, we should strive to be
but we're,
like him. Like, the people who are truly happy in life are the people who are happy where they are.
Well, I agree with
not,
you.
Not, like, constantly striving for better, more and more and more.
I agree with you.
If you can learn to just be happy in your everyday, then you're a happy person.
In general, I agree with you. I do think, though, like we just said about Jasmine's character, though, people are good at lying to themselves. And I think Jasmine probably thinks that, is her sister's name Amy?
No,
what's her sister's name? I can't remember.
Ginger.
Ginger. Yeah. Sally Hawkins, who is really, really good in this movie. Like I think she probably tells herself that Ginger's not really happy and that she's lying to herself. Obviously that's not the case in this situation.
No, I know. That's the whole point. That's what I'm saying. Is that that's all that Jasmine does is go, like, tell Ginger she's not happy.
Right, but we're saying that about Jasmine, too. It just happens to be true about her. But it's all perspective.
Well, no, I'm not saying. I'm saying she thought she was happy. She was just putting her head in the sand.
Have you ever seen A Streetcar Named Desire?
I think I may have seen it. Alabama Shakespeare Festival, but I don't really remember it.
Well, so I think there's a lot of there's been a lot of discussion about. I mean, some people that don't like this movie have called it a ripoff of that. It's clearly not a ripoff. It's very consciously referencing Streetcar a lot, and the basic idea of that is there's these sort of gruff couple that lives in New Orleans, and the woman's sister comes to visit them, and she's this like, this sort of waifish Southern woman who, you know, sort of doesn't really face reality, and everything is sort of like, I guess she sort of cleans everything up in her mind, and she refuses to acknowledge a lot of the things going on under the surface, like a lot of Southern people do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's particularly grossed out by the brutish boyfriend, who is Marlon Brando in the film version. But, so, I mean, I think there's a lot of people that point out the parallels. And I think what Woody Allen did with it was really clever. I think he took, like, the basic points of the story. And there's a few scenes in the movie that are, like, straight out of Streetcar, especially the ending. But I think he puts an interesting twist on it by making it about, because that movie was about Southern people refusing to acknowledge all the sort of horrible things under the surface of life. And this movie is about rich people from the East doing the same thing, which I think is a clever twist on the story.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. It was, Kate Blanchett was great.
Oh, yeah.
She always is. I will tell you some things that struck me about this performance.
Okay.
Part one. I think it occurs to me that, like, mostly she plays, like, really together people. So it was very interesting to see her playing someone who was, like, totally and utterly falling apart.
Right.
Also,
this is like the opposite.
When she start crying and, like, really getting very emotional, she looked uncannily like Joan Cusack. Like, very, like, multiple times during the movie. I was like, she looks so much like Joan Cusack right now. Like,
that's weird.
When she's, and, you know, they don't look like each other, but for some reason, like, when she would get upset, she would really look like Joan Cusack. I would like someone to back me up on this. Also, this cast of people, like, I love Bobby Cannavale, and there's a minute where I was like, are you going to make me not love him?
No, he was great.
But then they made me love him again.
Yeah, he was great.
I love the gentleman actor. He's, like, one of my favorite actors, but I refuse to learn his name.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
Yeah.
The dentist.
That, by the way, first of all, let me just tell you about dentistry.
No, don't go into this. No, I don't think I even want to know this story.
No, no, no. It's not having to do with the salacious details. I was, like, genuinely having anxiety attacks while she was
Watching her be a receptionist at a dentist's office.
While she was trying to schedule dental appointments, and people were being so ugly. I can't tell you, people. I used to do that, and it is the most stressful job. I don't think heart surgeons have it that bad. People get so irate and angry, and they're so obnoxious trying to schedule.
If only you had Valium back then.
If only. If only. Back then, as though I use it now.
Well,
but
I'm saying
also,
she did.
And it was sort of, like, the thing about this movie is it was kind of all over the place, but it was one of those things, like, we sometimes talk about with Breaking Bad, that it's, like, weird stuff happens, but, like, within the logic of the story, you're like, yep, that does make sense.
Like, what and weird,
like,
thing?
Like, the whole dental interlude, like, there wasn't really a point in that other than that just to, like, illustrate that it was a low time for her or something.
No, here's what
I... being abandoned, it isn't even a thing.
Here's what I think is the point of that episode is that she probably should have known that it was headed that direction. Because the very first scene we ever see between them, there's a little bit of creepiness happening. And certainly it increases every scene. And I think that's another instance of her putting blinders on to something that's going on. Because it's easier for her to... Because, you know, she's got this sort of convenient solution to her problem there. I think that's the main reason that happens there. I feel like another of the weird scenes you might be thinking of is the pizza restaurant scene. But I think there she's clearly losing it. I mean, that's one of my favorite
pizza
scenes.
Pizza restaurant scene?
Where she's with the two, her nephews.
No, I don't think that's weird. I think that was brilliant. Oh,
that's probably my favorite scene in the whole movie.
The most honest she is totally inappropriate. Like,
but she's talking to herself, though.
Yeah, but the kids are there, and that's like the first time you're hearing her, like, she's kind of acknowledging,
yes,
like, some reality.
I love when she goes into that mode. If you notice, her voice kind of goes, I feel like there's a lot of details in this performance that are acknowledging that they're like, she must have been drawing on some things that she made up that aren't in the script. Because when she's together, she has this very high, like,
patrician.
Yeah, but who am I thinking of? Spencer Tracy's wife. Catherine Hepburn. She sounds like Catherine Hepburn.
Yes.
And then when she hits the, which she's played before, that's right. Mm-hmm. But then she hits this, when she starts going to the dark place, she kind of, like, slows her voice down and it gets really low.
Well,
because
I think also she's, you know.
She's drunk too, yeah.
Well, but she's, like, I don't know that it's always drunk. She's strung out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I like that scene a lot. But, I mean,
who is Bobby Cannavale's friend? Because I swear I've seen that guy in something
you
before.
Have.
Who is he?
I noted his name at the beginning, and I was, it's the guy from Doogie Howser, his little buddy.
That's right.
What's his name?
That's who it is.
It is.
It's the guy from Doogie Howser. I loved that guy in this movie.
And he was on The Sopranos.
He was so likable in this movie.
I know.
Wasn't
he? I was stunned. I know his name because
I just wanted
that his name was in the credits.
I just wanted,
like,
to give
what?
Him.
And then he's there with his mustache, and he's totally unrecognizable. Super.
I wanted to
name.
Give him
Max
a hug.
Casella.
Yeah.
Is that because?
I don't know. He was great, though. And man, how about Andrew Dice Clay? I mean, I think he's...
Wait, tell me who that is.
Okay, so that's the first husband.
Oh!
He was really, really good.
He was. And, of course...
Woody really loves... He loves, like, greaseball Italian guys. That's a type that he does really well with.
Louis C.K.
C.K. was so good. He was good.
He tricked me?
Yeah. How about that? Making Louis C.K. a bad guy.
Like, this plot, like, I didn't... Like, at a certain point, I was like, okay, are they both getting their happy endings? And, like, the point is all she did was... All that Jasmine did was just get back exactly where she wanted to be. And then she doesn't. But, and, you know, and Ginger's got this nice new boyfriend. And then, so, like, I'm like, okay, this is the resolution. Like, now it's just turned into kind of, like, they both get their dreams come true. And then it was like, well,
no, that's
not what happened at all.
But I think Ginger is happy in the end.
Yes.
But I think, gosh, I mean, that's how it had to end for Jasmine, I think. But it's that whole, her last sort of, when she starts into her fantasy that she's telling them right before she leaves, it, like, gave me chills because I was like, oh, man, she's so crazy. Like, she's so far gone at this point.
Yeah.
There's no coming back.
Well, and so...
It's so creepy in a way.
Interestingly, too, he did this... he sort of foreshadowed because right at the beginning, she says, mm-hmm. I have so much guilt about Ginger. I just feel so guilty when she's around. And ultimately, her crazy, what you find out, is basically chalked up to the fact that she's guilty of, ultimately, her husband's suicide. Like, she's the root, like...
I don't know that that's fair.
Yeah, she...
Why is she guilty of her husband's suicide?
Because she's why he ended up in jail.
Oh, right. She made the phone call. Yeah, yeah. Okay, it's been, like, 24 hours, so I forgot about that. But, yes. Yeah,
so, it's ultimately...
Yeah, that's a crucial point. Yes.
And, you know, so even though she's kind of gross and disgusting, the whole time you're thinking, well, she is... Even if she was willfully ignorant, she's a victim of circumstance. And then you find out, well, of course she's gone insane. She basically killed her husband. And her whole life is ruined, and it's just her fault because she made one spiteful decision.
Now, he did deserve to go to jail...
Yeah, but he wouldn't have, probably, except for that she totally whistle blew on him.
I don't know how I feel about making that kind of statement about her. I think that she definitely, that was a strange decision for her to make. And I feel like it was sort of a snap. Yes. Like, I think that she just couldn't take the fantasy of it all anymore.
The fact that she does that means she did know all the time. She knew enough to be able to tell
right,
the FBI
that she put him away. Yeah,
that
right.
He's doing something. Maybe she didn't know all of the ins and outs, but she knew, which then also
it like burst
indicates,
out of her. Yeah.
By the way, that she was at least somewhat complicit in the fact that her sister and her then husband lost
that's
all
right.
the money because
so,
if she knew what
yeah,
was going
sure.
on, she is kind of guilty.
That's
for that.
Right, she is.
So like she's crazy because, but it's all her own undoing.
Well, and she says that when she starts ranting after she gets found out by Sarsgaard, Peter Sarsgaard.
God, I mean, do you think he was just the creepiest baby in the whole world? Because, I mean, you see that man's face, and you're just like, skis ball.
He's the perfect Woody Allen douchebag character. But you know what's funny, Francesca? Graham and I were talking about this, is that the negative reviews of this movie, it seems like a lot of them are coming from female critics don't seem to like the movie. And one of them, Graham said, mentioned specifically that she was like sympathizing with that character, with the Sarsgaard character. And that she was like, basically she felt, she's like, oh, I agree with everything that he said. I agreed with his position.
What, but, that he got so mad?
Yeah, that...
Well, I mean, the point is, they deserved each other. He was, you know, he kind of makes plain the fact that he wants to go into politics.
And he's
she'd
married,
be the right
yes.
woman for him
oh,
to go
Oh, he's totally gross,
with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're using each other. They're, you know, being...
But she ruined
disgusting
it.
Rich people.
Right.
And he
but
sees
she,
that she is, like, I mean, like he says, I picked you out of this party as, like, a woman of distinction.
Yes, that's right.
Blah.
But do you think that that's... It's funny to me because I'm seeing a little more of your side. I mean, I think I probably have a little less sympathy for her putting it all together like that because of the fact that she... I mean, I certainly feel bad because she's miserable.
By her own petard.
What a weird reference. But yeah, she... she definitely caused it all to happen.
Now, I don't think, because I do think she genuinely cares about her sister, and I don't think, like, I think all, you know, she didn't want her husband to die, and she didn't want her sister to lose all of her money, but her snap decision made those things come to pass.
Yes, yes.
Therefore, she has to live with the guilt of having, you know, because I genuinely don't think she would have purposefully done that to her sister.
But I feel like
embarrassed
watching
of her sister,
it,
but I think she did love her.
I found myself rooting for her for most of the movie. I wanted things to work out for her, and I was disappointed when it didn't, which is funny. And I think you felt the other way.
I didn't want her to be destroyed. I mean, I found it to be a pretty devastating ending, but I also, like I said, I kind of appreciate that he didn't really make you ever feel sympathy for her.
I don't think he asked you to that much.
I guess the point of the incident in the dentist office is she isn't helpless. Like, you know, she had a man and her boss, like, coming on her, and she did this awesome maneuver. He was kissing her, and she, like, wrapped her head, like, or her hands, like, around the side of
right.
his head, and, like, pushed him under her
she
armpit.
She headlocked him,
she,
yeah.
like, totally owned that, you know, she was able to deal with that.
Right.
So she's not...
That's a good point.
Completely
a good
sympathetic,
point.
Or a completely
helpless yeah.
victim. And I have to say, one of the most brilliant things that happened in this movie, thank goodness, after the incident, I still managed to get there on time. I got there at the very end of the last...
Yeah, you went to the wrong theater.
Is that the way it opens... wait, let me stop you there for a second. I went to the wrong theater because someone neglected to tell me what theater the movie was, that which you was like, you were like, oh, it's at 3:45. So I assumed it was at the theater that's near our house, the one to which we have been talking about seeing various movies.
It may or may not have been mentioned at some point. I'll certainly take the blame for not being more specific.
I'm really glad that I got to see the beginning because that was such a brilliant first 3 minutes.
Oh, I loved
first,
it, yeah.
You think, like, she's just being friendly to somebody on the plane.
No,
and
it's
like,
a good
over
gag.
The course of 2 minutes, you realize she is bad shit.
Yeah, no.
Like, and then...
It was a good gag.
But also, in her crazy, not able to stop talking, you also get a little bit of her backstory, or at least you get the sense of her delusion. And, you know, like, because she's still talking about it, like, it's this wonderful fairy tale story. And then you have that woman who's just standing next to her, listening to her with increasing, like, incredulity. Then, you know, in just this sort of very Woody Allen, like, offhanded thing, say to her husband, like, I thought she was talking to herself, but I thought she said something to me, and then she's just been talking for the entire plane
yeah,
ride.
That's great.
So, like, as if you kind of have a sense of that she's crazy, but you're like, well, maybe not, and then the woman's like, no. Like, let me tell you what just happened, husband. And that was sort of so brilliant because it starts out like two girls just gabbing, and within the course of, like, 3 minutes becomes like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
So this is what we're in for. Thought that was brilliant.
I really am impressed. I just feel like he had more of an idea in this movie than he's had with a lot of his recent ones. Like, there's a very clear purpose and kind of, you know, I think it's sort of intangible a little bit, but sometimes when you see a really good, well put together movie, it kind of feels like it's all one thing. It like congeals into this singular kind of feeling that you can remember really well later after the movie. Like it has its own kind of scent to it in a way. I don't have a great word here.
Stop
to describe
saying congeal
it.
And scent.
Disgusting. But you know what I'm saying? Like a good movie that's got a real identity to it, and he's been a little bit hard to pin down recently. I think Midnight in Paris he got in that direction, but this one is I just feel like this is it's somebody even who really loves Woody Allen movies. This was just so much more put together, and a lot of it has to do with Cate Blanchett, that he got the exact right actress for this part and some other really good supporting actors around
it. Well, and one of the brilliant things, which of course was just because this is, well, she sort of has that chameleon face, but she and her friend with the glasses from her heydays in New York, he's very good. He captured this thing of rich women not even necessarily being good looking, but just that there's...
They're
this
put
is,
together.
I guess, Cate Blanchett, too. Like, it's a way that they carry themselves.
Yes.
And, you know, like, her glasses friend was like, if she wasn't, you know, completely dressed to the nines and perfectly appointed, would be a homely, like, if you just put her in jeans and a t-shirt, she would be a homely looking girl. But he, like, I mean, I guess credit is due to his costumer or whatever. And, like I say, to the two of these women for knowing how to carry it off. But, like, there's a rich girl thing, and it doesn't have anything to do with your actual just, like, baseline looks. It has to do with carriage and dressing, and that is why, even though I am a ravishing creature, I will always look fairly humble.
Whatever.
I don't believe not in dressing true. Nicely.
But Kate Blanchett is totally, this is one of those roles where she just completely becomes another person, but she doesn't do it in a gross, showy way. Like, she's not doing, like, a crazy accent. It's a totally believable accent. It would be hard to do an impression of this character, I feel like, which I think is a good thing. I think she just really created something here, and this would be, I mean, this would be a performance I would be totally okay with winning Best Actress. Like, I would think this is sort of deserving of that level of honor. Because she carries the whole movie,
she's sort
too, but
of shortlisted at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah, she's got to be. But I think it's a really good movie, too. I just think it was well written.
Max Cassell, that is definitely his name, officially.
And okay. I think, you know, I think Woody did some different things photographically than he's, you know, it's
well,
not lazy.
One thing, he was in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, which is also unusual. But he, man, Woody Allen can make a city look damn good. Any, you just put him in any
city.
Well,
I think a character says something to the tune of, like, you can't fall in love in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Like, so I think it is a fairly, by the way, kept on, twice Marin was mentioned, which was
that's
the name
right.
of my golden retriever growing up. Named after the county, Marin County.
San Francisco is very beautiful.
My parents did
but he,
briefly live in
he
San
nailed
Francisco.
It. But, and then I just think Ben Flanagan and I talked a little bit about, one of the first things he told me after he saw it was the ending is something different for Woody Allen. And he usually, his movies have a little bit of a fizzle to the end of them. Like, the story kind of ends, and then there's a little bit of a moment that we all take, and it's sort of, you know, music comes up and it's over. And this one was really like, he's got you hanging until the last frame looking at her face. And, you know, I would say, like, the last shot of the movie is one of the most important pieces of the story. Because it's how she ultimately ends up for us. And it's, there's just so much, like, energy in the ending of that movie. It's unusual for a Woody Allen movie to end where you feel like, oh, man, like, he was going full speed as he wrote the end of that movie. I don't know. It sort of makes me excited about what he's got going on right now. It just seems like he's a little more dialed in as a filmmaker right now. And
well,
as a fanboy, I'm
but
excited.
You know, the thing is that he has his, you know, drawer full of scraps of paper. And
yeah, sure. He could have written this 20 years ago.
He kind of picks them at random.
Right.
Well, it's not that he writes them, but that he has his ideas.
Well, this
and
was a good
pulls
one.
Pulls one out and goes like, yeah, this seems like a good one.
It was
so, I mean, it's not, I mean, you might want to say, you know, you feel like you're like, oh, he's coming into a thing. But I mean, it is kind of as random as it can be, all coming from one man's mind.
But it was well executed, too. It's the kind of idea he would have made in the 80s, but he really executed it really well, I feel like. And I don't know. I'm just, I really liked it. I would say this is my favorite movie of the year so far.
All right. Well, going to see World's End.
Yeah, World's End should be coming up soon.
I'm so excited.
So stay tuned for that. All right. Well, that's it for me.
Also me.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Nope. That was the...
There we go.
That was my Woody Allen ending, really.
With the bang.
Yeah.